And now, get ready to smile again with radio's home folks, Vic and Sade, written by Paul Reiner. Yes, so here again, friends. Your good friends, Vic and Sade, brought to you by the makers of Crisco. And with them is your radio neighbor, Mrs. Beach, who chats with you every day about cooking and good food. Mrs. Beach has just been telling me some more about the pies her daughter Patty is making.
Well, honestly, Patty tickles me so. She's only 12, you know. But since that first pie she made with the new Crisco pastry method a couple of weeks ago, well, there's just been no holding her. Just yesterday afternoon, she brought me in some peach pie she'd made for the children's lunch. I thought I wouldn't eat it right then, and I told her so. And I wish you could have seen her little face fall. "Why, Mama," she said, "I just want to see the expression on your face when you taste the crust." Now, you know, even if you weren't hungry, you couldn't resist that. And Patty certainly got her reward because I ate every speck. Honestly, Crisco's new pastry method gives you such wonderful pie crust. You know, they guarantee you tender, flaky pie crust every single time or your money back. Honestly, it's such a relief not worrying about tough pie crusts anymore. I don't know about you, but I used to turn out tough pie crust occasionally, usually when we were having company. But that's all over now. You see, Crisco's specially made just to give you tender, flaky pie crust. It's different from any other shortening at your store. So why don't you get some Crisco? You'll find the new pastry method is right on the label. And try it for a pie. Remember, the Crisco people actually guarantee you tender, flaky pie crust. In fact, if you aren't satisfied with your pie crust, just drop me a note on the back of a Crisco label telling me why. Address me, Mrs. Isabella Beach, care of Crisco, Cincinnati, Ohio, and the Crisco people will refund you the price of one full pound. Now, what could be fairer than that? So make a pie this new Crisco way real soon, won't you? And now it's time for our visit with Vic and Sade.
Well, sir, it's a few minutes past 9 o'clock in the morning as we enter the small house halfway up in the next block now, and we find Mrs. Victor Gook and her son, Mr. Rush Gook, not in the kitchen, not on the porch, not in the living room or dining room, not upstairs, but high aloft in the attic. The light is inadequate, and we're barely able to discern our friends. Young Rush is saying discontentedly,
"Gosh, but it's dark and stuffy and miserable and hot and dusty up here."
"Yes, hurry up and open the window."
"I'll peel off my shirt."
"Open the window first. We have to have light and air before we choke."
"Atmosphere like this makes an individual feel mean. Keep a person up here 8 minutes and they're liable to get the impulse to face their grandmother one upside the snoot. I was reading in the newspaper where four guys were cooped up in a boxcar and they got to sticking pins in each other's flesh and...
"Slide that window up, will you?"
"I'm trying to. It works stiff as a horse."
"You want some help?"
"I'll get it."
"Ish, what a nasty noise. Gives you the willies."
"Fresh air feels good."
"Yes, move to one side so a little blows on me."
"Well."
"What's the matter?"
"So that's what's become of Rooster Davis's taped-up tennis ball."
"Is it on the porch roof?"
"Yeah. Wonder if I'm still little enough to climb out of that window."
"Look, Sonny, we're up here for work. We've put this attic off and put this attic off. Now that we're here, let's make every minute count. I know it's not pleasant on a nice summer morning to have to breathe this awful stale
air." "Hey, Bluetooth!" "Bluetooth Johnson's strolling up the street."
"Well, leave him stroll. Now the first thing..."
"Bluetooth! Hey!"
"All right, all right."
"He can't locate me. He's staring at the house, but the tree hides me from view. Come here and see the bewildered expression he's got on his face. Look up over your head, Bluetooth. I'm on top of the telegraph pole." "He bit. He's looking up." "No, the other telegraph pole, Bluetooth."
"Rush, we're not going to have any shenanigans, and that's all there is about it. Come away from that window." "Let's pitch in and use some elbow grease and get through. Shouldn't take us more than an hour and a half if we hustle."
"An hour and a half? Mom, are you calmly telling me we have to skulk around in this horrible..."
"You can cut out the complaining and bellyaching right here and now, mister."
"Oh, but holy smoke, flesh and blood can't endure..."
"Just forget about flesh and blood. We plan to get after this attic way early this summer when school first let out. Goodness, your vacation's almost over, and we're only just tackling the job. You've stalled me off and stalled me off. I've got you up here at last, and I don't want to hear any grousing and sobbing. You sitting down?"
"I might as well sit down while you're telling
me." "Get up from there this second. When was it? Just last Thursday, we're all set to clean the attic, and I let you traipse off to Tawanda or someplace? You said then you'd work like a beaver straightening around up here." "Oh, for mercy's sake."
"Ouch, doggone it."
"Well, can't you stand on your feet?"
"That's a fine lot of sympathy to give a guy that falls down and almost murders herself."
"Hurt yourself?"
"Sure."
"Well, I imagine you live. What'd you trip over?
Half with popcorn popper.
Pick it up and lay it on the trunk.
Oh, to sling it out the window and smash it in 8 million fragments.
It's strictly your own fault. You're the party that tosses that popcorn popper up here on the floor. When I put it away, I lay it carefully on the steps.
I'd like to broke my leg.
Rub it a little. I've got everything pretty well organized in my head how we're going about this job. You do exactly what I tell you to do and report promptly the minute you've finished each little assignment. And that way, working together, we'll be down...
Listen.
Hmm?
I heard somebody.
I don't hear anybody.
Probably Bluetooth Johnson prowling around hunting for me. He couldn't locate my voice, and I'll bet $40 he's out in the yard looking
all
over.
Let's put Bluetooth Johnson and everything else out of our minds for the next couple hours or so.
Next couple hours or so? You said an hour and a half.
I don't know how long it'll take us. I know this much, though. We're going to stay till we get done.
My leg hurts.
Most likely you're on the point of death. Now, let's get moving. First thing I want you to do is pick up all the junk that's scattered. And don't tell me listen anymore, either.
No, but... You hear that?
Hear what?
Listen once. Uncle Fletcher, by George.
Oh, my.
We're in the attic,
no,
Uncle Fletcher.
No, you don't. Be still. Quiet.
You're going to ignore him?
Well, I certainly am.
It is hardly like you, Mom, to ignore visitors that call at your home.
Oh, yes. He just wandered in. He'll wander out again in a minute.
Lady!
Listen to him.
First thing I want you to do, Willie, is pick up this accumulation of stuff litter in the floor. And while you're busy
listen
at that,
to
I'll...
Him.
What?
Poor old Uncle Fletcher.
Lady!
He'll go away directly. Now, please, Rush, hop in and buckle down. What are you doing?
Peeling off my lame brain shirt. I'm about to choke from the heat.
Anything to make a diversion. Anything to kill time. And after all
Lady.
Those...
Uncle Fletcher's coming upstairs.
Let's lower our voices.
It isn't like you, Mom, to treat flesh and blood relations like
oh,
they were...
Oh, flesh and blood relations, my eye. Be fine if he joined us, wouldn't it? We'd get plenty accomplished, wouldn't we?
He knows we're around somewhere.
Lower your voice.
He knows we're around somewhere.
How does he?
Because all the doors are open. He appreciates we wouldn't go off and leave the house wide open.
Upstairs, are you, Sadie?
Oh, darn it.
He'll track us down.
Not taking a bath, are you, Sadie?
Might as well give up the ghost, Mom.
Yes, we'd feel awful foolish getting caught up here all guilty like we were hiding.
Shall I holler to him?
Sadie!
Mom, shall I holler to him?
All right.
Hello, Uncle Fletcher.
Ernest.
Hey, down there, Uncle Fletcher.
Fletcher, you what?
Yeah, I'm in the attic.
Why? Attic, huh?
Yeah, Mom's with me.
Why?
Come on up.
Oh, well, you needn't have told him that. He might have decided to trot on along about it.
Glorious morning.
Yeah.
How are you, Uncle Fletcher?
Yes, like the scream is off the bell.
Watch out for your head coming up those stairs.
Who's this?
Now, look, mister, maybe we can still get something accomplished. I'll sit Uncle Fletcher down on the trunk out of our road. You won't want to stay in this hot, sticky, dusty place more than 5 minutes, and then we can go
ahead. Bumped into your sidekick, Bluetooth Johnson, outside, Rush.
Oh, did you?
Yes, I did. You stand out in the yard, and I... By George, it's dark.
Yes, Uncle Fletcher. Now, just imagine you won't want to stay. We're straightening around up here, and we're anxious to get done.
Fella gets kind of a sticky sensation.
That's because it's so close and airless.
Fine. Sadie, I saw Ted Stubb on him a while ago also.
Fred, Willie, you needn't stand there. Have you picked up one single thing yet?
No, I'm still peeling off my shirt.
Oh, well, honestly.
Well,
shucks. Yes, I saw old Ted Stembottom.
Fred Stembottom.
That's what I say. I jollied him. Ted and I jolly back and forth all the time. Ted, I said, you ought to be arrested for ordering this weather. Ted laughed. The weatherman's a scoundrel, he says. I believe the next time I see him, I'll punch him in the nose. I give old Ted back as good as he said. Ted, I said, looking serious and not looking wrong. They say there's going to be a law passed forbidding everybody
Uncle
to weather
Fletcher,
overshoes
you...
unless the temperature's 40 below zero. Furthermore, Ted, I said, I know this.
Uncle but... Fletcher.
You heard this joke, have you say?
No, I was just going to suggest that maybe you'd like to sit down on the trunk there.
Glorious.
That way, Rush and I can go ahead with our work.
Yes.
Now, stop the stalling you. We've been here almost half an hour, and what have we done? Absolutely nothing. I've stood for about all the nonsense I'm going to stand for.
Uh-oh.
Goodness, Uncle Fletcher.
I fell down.
You didn't hurt yourself?
Sure, I hurt myself. I think I fell down for fun.
What'd you trip over?
Numbskull popcorn popper.
You didn't pick up that popcorn popper.
I started to, but you attracted my attention by giving a speech about all the stuff you wanted me to do and in
Look,
order to listen.
Not now. Uncle Fletcher might have killed himself.
Yes.
Didn't come any closer to killing himself than I did.
Pick up that popcorn popper, not another word.
Sadie, do you remember Irma Flo Kessie there in Belvedere?
No.
Moved to Dubuque, Missouri, married a man 36 years old, and later died.
No. Rush, I warned you.
I'm picking up stuff. I got my arms full of stuff I picked up.
Well, keep right on. No more dawdling.
Rush, this Irma Flo Kessie, that was such a great friend of your mother's, Aunt Belvedere, used to have a little habit of slapping her husband's face in public. She was a peevish woman, see? Least little thing make her behave.
Keep going, Rush.
Uncle Fletcher's talking to me.
You can listen and work.
How's that?
Nothing.
Uh-huh. Well, sir, Rush, Irma Flo Cassie's husband would say, I believe it's going to rain, Irma Flo. Irma Flo would turn and hit him upside the jaw. Her husband's statement was going to rain rubbed her the wrong way, understand? Or maybe at the dinner table, he'd say, please pass the pepper, Irma Flo. Irma Flo'd smack him for that. Halfwit husband got so that every time he opened his mouth, he'd hide his face in his arms so his wife...
Oh, my gracious sakes alive.
He slipped off the trunk.
Hurt yourself, Uncle Fletcher?
Sure.
Well, how'd you happen to fall off the trunk?
It slipped off.
I give up, Rush.
Huh?
I give up.
You mean...
We're going downstairs.
Oh?
Come on, Uncle Fletcher. We're all going downstairs.
Fine.
Step along, everybody.
Attic looks much better now that you've cleaned it up.
Yes, doesn't it?
Rush makes a nice helper for you.
Makes a glorious helper.
Which way are you headed, Uncle Fletcher?
Oh, up the alley, I guess.
Towards Tapman's vacant lot?
Uh-huh.
I'll go with you.
Which concludes another brief interlude at the small house halfway up in the next block. And so we leave Mrs. Beach and Crisco's Vic and Sade until the next time. Don't forget to listen. Ed Roberts speaking.
Pretty undies, pretty sweaters, pretty things need Ivory Flakes. Keep bubbly, soft and sparkling, Ivory Flakes is what it takes. Yes, it takes gentle care to keep rayon slips and nighties soft and sparkling.
Rayons have to be weaker when it's wet, you know. Your bright rayons need careful handling, need a mild soap.
And that's where Ivory Flakes fills the bill. They are Ivory Mild. Yes, Ivory Flakes are the fast, convenient flake form of Ivory soap. Just as mild, just as pure.
So don't use strong soaps.
Instead, wash your pretty rayon undies in pure, mild Ivory Flakes and help them stay lovely.
Lovely longer.
That's right. You know, we washed a Miss Swank rayon slip, a pretty pink one, 35 consecutive times in Ivory Flakes. And the color was still lovely. The material soft and lustrous.
It looked almost like new after 35 Ivory Flakes washings. So keep your rayon slips in the pink with Ivory Flakes care. Use them often.
Use them always. Don't forget. Pretty undies, pretty sweaters, pretty things need Ivory Flakes. Keep them lovely, soft and sparkling. Ivory Flakes is what it takes.
This program came to you from Chicago and New York. This is the National Broadcasting Company.